It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And there's a couple of things I wanted to mention just to give you an idea of how things can change here and very quickly. First of all, on the 10th of November, my good friend Dallas Hudson from over in Akeley was out on his deer stand, and he saw meadowhawk dragonflies and three, count them, three clouded sulfur butterflies. Those are those little yellow ones that are about, an inch and a quarter wingspan. And he posted on the Minnesota Phenology Network Facebook site that deer hunting ain't what it used to be. This week, deer hunting is more like what you'd expect for Minnesota. And the snow on the ground is, I won't say typical, because lately, the last 10 or 15 years, it's been closer to the 1st of December that we've actually had our first snow that comes and stays. Now, this snow could melt away in the next week, or it could remain and be the bed for a lot more snow. We won't know that until it becomes apparent, and that may not be for several weeks. We'll just have to kind of keep our eye on things and watch as they happen. A couple other things I want to bring you up to date on. Ed Dallas was talking about chipmunks still active at his house, and he also mentioned that ravens were, he could hear ravens down in his neck of the woods. He lives in Deerwood or near Deerwood, and he doesn't hear ravens there very often. The Mississippi River, which is kind of just north of Deerwood a little way, is sort of the boundary line for as far south as ravens go. And so he's been hearing a few ravens, and he's kind of all okay with that. He likes the idea that there might be some ravens in his neighborhood. There are lots of ravens up here, and I hope you're enjoying them. I've been watching them fly little tandem pairs here and there, sometimes four of them, and they're all about their courtships right now. Not courtships, because it isn't the time for them to be breeding, but it's pair bonding. It's kind of that time of year when they set the relationship back on its proper footing, and they are monogamous, and they, you know, spend the winter kind of, those that are paired off spend the winter defending their territory from the invaders, and the invaders are all of those flocks of ravens who are either juveniles or unmated adults. And if you see a big flock of ravens, more than two, you're probably looking at juveniles who are maybe out scouting looking for food, or unmated adults, or adults who have lost their mates and haven't found another mate yet. So ravens are really interesting this time of year. I like watching them. They do a lot of fun things. Ed also mentioned how much fun it was to be out in the woods early in the morning and watch the woods come to life around him. He said that the watching the nuthatches and the chickadees begin to start flitting around and checking things out. And he also mentioned watching a red squirrel come out from its den, stretch, yawn, and then get right into it and do all those red squirrel things. And I'm reminded of that Gary Larson cartoon about what little dogs do in the morning, and it shows the little dachshund having a big cup of espresso early in the morning. And I'm thinking maybe what Ed didn't see before the squirrel appeared in front of him was the squirrel having his big cup of espresso and getting himself all wound up and ready to go. My own notes this week include snow buntings, and one of the kids from Virginia described them as appearing as leaves blown before the wind. And indeed, the snow buntings have a kind of a reckless flight pattern that keeps them usually down low over open fields, and they do look a lot like a bunch of leaves that have been picked up by the wind and thrown headlong across the snow. So keep an eye out for snow buntings. There are a bunch of them around. Still some juncos in the area. Other birds you should be looking for. I saw my first pine grosbeak this week. Those are the, they're robin-sized or a little better. I suppose robin-sized probably sums it up. They have a very stout beak, which is made for cracking seeds. The males are a pale reddish rose-colored, kind of a beautiful red bird, not bright like the cardinal, but more subtle, but definitely red. The females are pretty much gray with a little bit of orange on their backs, and both of them will come to your feeder. They like seeds either on the ground or on a platform feeder with no roof. They don't like to eat at feeders that have roofs. If they can't avoid it, they will eat at feeders with a roof. But if you really want to attract them, put out a feeder that's just a platform and put the seeds on that. Or you can do like I do, which is to just put a piece of plywood on the deck and scatter some seeds on top of that so that they can come there and eat. And they will come. If they're in your neighborhood, you'll see a bunch of pine grosbeak for sure. Pine siskins will be in the area, red poles, these pine siskins, I tend to think of them as little brown birds with a touch of yellow at the edge of their feathers. The red poles have that little cap of red, and otherwise they are sort of mottled brown, and they will be in the area before too long. Northern shrikes, I've had some reports of northern shrikes. I haven't seen one myself, but they're definitely coming into the area. These are large birds, larger than a robin, and they're a lot like a gray jay in their coloring. Both the birds are primarily gray, but the northern shrike has a black line that runs from the beak right through the eye. So he's got this black line on his face, and then he's got black wings and a black tail. And that's not the case with the gray jays. The gray jays have none of those black markings. So you see something that you might think is a gray jay, and it's quite got this black marking on it, why, then you're probably looking at a northern shrike. And the other thing that helps you to identify northern shrikes is their habit of flying low across the ground and then sweeping up to land on a power line or at the top of a power pole or at the top of a tree. And it's just that. I mean, they're flying along quite low to the ground, and just as they get ready to land, they'll sweep up, sometimes climbing 15, 20, 30 feet higher than what they've been flying to land up in these trees up high. Also this week, watching some of the trees that are out there that still have leaves, the weeping willow. So if you're looking along the river or if you're driving along and you're looking at somebody's yard, watch for trees that still have leaves. And the weeping willow has a long, thin leaf. Looks like it's a real long, thin, narrow leaf. It's much narrower than it is long. And they're starting to turn a little bit yellow-green right now, though they don't get very yellow before they fall. And the weeping willows that I've been looking at, for the most part, they seem to lose their leaves from the top going down the tree toward the bottom. So watch for the weeping willows. Also, if you're in an area where there's lots of sweet soils, lots of basswoods and sugar maples and that, the understory is often populated by small ironwood trees, and the ironwoods have sort of bronze-colored leaves on them, coppery-colored leaves, and those leaves will remain on the ironwoods, not every ironwood, but and not every leaf, but the ironwoods will cling to a bunch of leaves over the winter, and it'll be April before those leaves begin to really fall off of those trees. I mentioned the snow, about 3 inches fell in the Grand Rapids area and accumulated. This is our first snowfall of over a quarter of an inch, and it is also the first snow that has stayed for longer than 24 hours for this year. And I talked to a lot of people about deer hunting over the past few weeks, including a phone call this morning from our friend Miles, who called from Bemidji, said that he was lucky and bagged his deer on the second day of the season. The Sunday passed, and Miles was successful. He said a lot of people in the Bemidji area hadn't really been as successful yet. So I hope that your deer hunting is going well. Also, my friend Marvin, who lives right next door, was talking about this spot in a field that's right by his house, and we both know about this spot. There's this field is 30 acres or so, and then right at the edge of the field, it kind of drops away to a swamp, and there's a hill there, and from the road, you can't see that corner of the field. He talked about being in his deer stand and watching this old doe that comes out there, and he's seen her many, many days. She comes out in the afternoon, and she feeds below that hill, and she listens to what's going on Blue Heron Road. And he said every time a car goes down Blue Heron Road, she creeps up near the top of the hill and just puts her head up where she can see the road. And she watches the road, and if the car stops, she quickly turns and runs back into the woods and waits it out. But if the car just kind of drives down Blue Heron Road, she just watches from this little outpost. Now, if you were driving across Blue Heron Road, and I do it twice a day every day, you wouldn't even see her head. She's concealed herself. But here she is watching what's going on, and he said she's an old doe, and she seems to have a few tricks up her sleeves in terms of keeping her eye on things without putting herself out in the open. I was talking a little bit about birds. I forgot to mention a couple of astounding birds that I saw this past week. One, the pileated woodpecker, came right up to the house, landed on the window trim, and proceeded to rattle the house pretty good. It got our attention in a hurry. And so I got to get some suet and put it out for that bird so that he can be distracted from tearing my house apart. The other birds that I saw, I was over at Pine River last Thursday and at the Pine River Bacchus Schools talking with Mrs. Dallas Rood's class, and just as I was walking into the school, 7 trumpeter swans flew right over the building, and it was just gorgeous, just astounding. I was totally amazed. And last Friday, while I was doing some work out in the yard, my dog, my little puppy, came up to me and deposited in my hand a masked shrew. Now, this is one of the smallest mammals capable of keeping itself warm in this climate. And this thing, if you think of a hummingbird, the masked shrew is sort of the mammal equivalent. It's about the same size in terms of body mass. The hummingbird looks bigger because it's got all those feathers and wings, but the masked shrew isn't much bigger than the end of your thumb from the last joint. If you have a hand like mine, it's about an inch and a half long, not counting the tail. And the tail is another inch or so. So the whole critter is probably 2.5 inches long. Got a long, furry little snout and his inconspicuous ears, but you can see his eyes, which is not the case for a lot of those voles and whatnot. You almost have to pull the fur back to see their eyes. But the masked shrew, this little guy, he's got to eat all the time. He's got to run 100% all the time. If he doesn't eat every 3 or 4 hours, he's going to starve to death. And in a day's time, this masked shrew will eat almost his body weight in food. And oddly enough, they're not afraid to tackle something as big as a mouse. And this would be like, I don't know, think of something twice your size and think of taking it down and eating it. This is the masked shrew. Pretty fearsome little critter, but mighty small and living right on the fringe as things go. Fun to watch, fun to see, fun to think about, because there are a lot of them out there. You just never see them because they're so small and so active. That's our Phenology show for today. Thanks for tuning in. As always, if you have comments, questions, or observations you want to share, please send them along. Thank you. Well, it is time for Talk Back. If you've got a message you'd like to send to us, maybe you'd like to tell us how your deer hunting's been going, or maybe you've got an observation you'd like to share about something that happened in your life. It doesn't matter what it is. We're anxious to hear from you. You can get in touch with us by calling our Talk Back line. That number is 999-9876. You can also reach us at comments@kaxe.org, and you can reach us at... You can reach me personally at jlatimer@kaxe.org, and you can always write us a letter. We love to get your letters, and the address is 260 Northeast 2nd Street, Grand Rapids, Minnesota, 55744. We heard from a number of you this week, including those intrepid explorers from Mr. Holmes' fifth grade class at the Roosevelt Elementary School in Virginia. This week, Jake is our reporter.
It snowed 4 inches in Virginia on November 13th. The kids in my class are happy to see the snow, but the janitor thinks it's a pain in the behind when the kids track it in off the playground. We saw our first snow bunting on October 28th on our way back from the school forest. And the last two were seen for sure north of Brett on November 5th. Although Bailey is pretty sure she saw two fly over her yard in the snow on Sunday. Bailey says the flocks of snow bunting she's seen fly like leaves in the wind when they take off and land. The last of the ducks and geese have flown from the pond by Bill's cabin. Ice is forming on water. Michaela observed a raven in the tree outside her bedroom window. It looked like it was doing stretching exercises, and then, because of the way it moved its wings, it looked like it was taking a bath. On our last trip to the school forest, we collected a box of items to send to the DNR that represent the Northern Boreal Forest. We sent a field guide we made of flowers, mosses, lichens, and fungi. We also included a rock display, a birch bark tube, a conifer cone display, and a beaver stick that got taken away from Alex when he used it to throw a spear at a red squirrel. He missed. Kiana has three grouse that eat under their bird feeder in her yard. Her brother wants to shoot them, but her mom says, "You're not shooting my yard, grouse." Both Skylar and Jonas have seen moose while hunting in bears. From his deer stand, Jonas saw two bull moose together eating swamp grass. 10 of 22 kids in my class went hunting last weekend. Miranda didn't hunt. She was playing with a deer call in her yard and making noises with it. A group of deer were eating grass, and when they heard the noise, a buck steps toward her. She went inside the house and didn't come out until they were gone. That is our report for this week. Thank you and goodbye.
Nice job, Jake. Lots of good things there. Those kids are really on the ball. I got to give a shout out to Mr. Holmes, their teacher. He really does a nice job with them. Snow bunting's like leaves blowing in the wind. Boy, that's a pretty image, and it's really true. If you've watched the snow buntings get up from out of that snowy ground and kind of blast across the way, why, you're probably going to feel almost the same experience. And three grouse in the yard that mom won't let them shoot. Right, I'm I'm all over that. I've got grouse in my yard, and they're. Once they're in the yard, they're safe. If I catch them on the driveway on the way to the yard, not the same thing. Actually, on my property, I insist that they be on the wing, which makes them almost safe every once in a while. Bad luck happens, and I end up eating a grouse. But yeah, if they're right there in the yard, nah, I don't think so. That's not right. So, you know, I've got another note here that came from our good friends down at the Forest View Middle School Bird Club. This one says that Hunter saw his second northern shrike of the month near Hackensack. He also saw a ruffed grouse, a pileated woodpecker, and some dark-eyed juncos. Travis saw a red-tailed hawk near his house. He and his older brother Wyatt have been reporting red-tailed hawk sightings for years at our bird club meetings. I see them a lot down by their house as well. They have just the right mixture of oaks and open areas to attract these raptors. The deer hunting from the group has the following results. Hunter got an 8-pointer in Wisconsin, and our alum, Kevin, took a 7-pointer, and Ben got his first buck, a really nice 8-pointer. Continuing the alumni report, I was able to visit with Kevin and Sam at the Bay Neshe Council Bird Club meeting on Thursday night at the Northland Arboretum. They both enjoyed the program on birds of Alaska. Kevin has completed his Eagle Scout project and is working on completing the rest of his requirements. Ben sparked some interest at the meeting with a report of a possible great gray owl. There will be some efforts to verify this sighting. We will not meet this week due to Mr. Perry having cafetorium and front door duty. You don't get that at the post office, do you? No, but you can always find me near the cafetorium. Thanksgiving break will be next week. We're looking forward to getting back together and look forward to sending you our reports. Until then, we'll see you outside. And I hope to see some of you outside as well. It's a good place to be seen, and there's lots out there to see, even though you might not think that as you look out the window this morning. We heard this week from the Northern Lights Community School in Warba, and our reporter this week is Titus.
The temperature this morning at school was 28 degrees, and today the high was supposed to get to 38 degrees, and the low to 21 degrees. This weekend was the first snowfall that stayed. Alex saw a group of black squirrels, and a flock of small black birds were sighted. And last week, Karen's husband was sprayed by a skunk while walking the dog, and two coyotes were sighted. Thank you for listening to Warble Phenology Report. Bye.
Thank you, Titus. That's a nice job. And yeah, we did have some snow that came and stuck on the grounds for the first time. And we'll be talking about more about that and some other things. And Karen's husband sprayed by a skunk while walking the dog. You know, I've been sprayed by a skunk before. More than once, actually. It wasn't like I couldn't learn the lesson. It's not a pleasant thing, although I will tell you this, that once you've been sprayed by a skunk, like after about 10 minutes, you can't really smell it anymore. You personally, I mean, the person who's been sprayed, your nose just goes, yeah, you know, we've smelled that. We're going to just ignore that smell. But everybody else knows you've been sprayed by a skunk for quite a while. A couple of days, if you're cleanly, and for a kid like me, when it happened, right, it probably went on for a couple of weeks. Unless it happened to be raining. But, yeah, it's not a pleasant experience. I do remember reading about a guy who studies skunks and his chosen field. And he talked about skunks having personalities. Some were agitated and easily upset and would spray right away, and others were pretty calm about the whole experience. He talked about carrying a skunk one time that he had to, he caught it in a trap, and he had to take blood samples, and he had to weigh it and so forth, and he said he had to walk a couple of miles back to his camp to do all this lab work. And he said that he was carrying the skunk by the tail with it at the end of his arm, and he said every time he switched hands, he'd get fatigued, and every time he'd switch hands, the skunk would spray him again. And he described the spray as sort of yellowish and sticky, and it would get on his glasses. And I'm thinking, boy, I wonder if there was any point in that hike where he thought to himself, you know, I could have studied wolverines, or I could have studied coyotes, or I could have studied bears, anything but skunks. Anyway, Karen, I'm sure your husband will recover. It may not be real soon, and it may be that whenever he gets wet, he'll start smelling like a skunk again, but it'll go away. I was checking out Jay Munson's website, and he has his kids blogging about phenology on the web, and you can check out the site, and I will post his address so you can read what his kids are are doing out there. But one note that I have from the 14th this year from a student named Logan, he said, yesterday I saw dog tracks in my front yard. Believe me, I don't have a dog. I saw a black bird. It was so fat. It was in a tree in my front yard. The snow is awesome. I like the world because there's lots of life. If you drink in Lake Superior from the lake, it's really cold and good. And that's Logan's note for the 14th. And yeah, I'll bet Lake Superior water is cold. We have a report that came over our phone lines from a student who didn't give us the name of her school or her teacher. And we're going to play that for you. We remind you that if you're calling in your reports, identify yourself and your school. You don't have to do it as part of your school project. If you're a student and you've got some phenology you want to report, you could just call in and tell us what school you go to and what your first name is, and we will play that report for you. Here's our report.
We saw a coyote walking up and down a road. We saw a swan on the river, and skunks are hibernating. Someone saw two owls, and we will keep looking for more things.
That's great. Yeah, two owls. Boy, you know, I've seen a few owls myself, and I heard one the other day that was seemed like it was right near the house, and it's always exciting to be around the owls because they are so... I don't know. They're almost magical. They're really incredibly powerful birds, and they, of course, their silent flight and so forth makes them really hard to keep track of. We got one more series of notes from a class down in Little Falls, and they saw two pileated woodpeckers flying around. That was Chelsea. Snowshoe hares are partially white, and they stick out on the snowless ground. Observed large groups of grouse and fox squirrels. That came from Seth, and the first measurable snow was falling on the 15th, and that note was from Colin, and we thank Mr. Caddett's class down in Little Falls for those phenology notes. That's our talkback show for this week. If you have comments, questions, or observations you'd like to share, please send them along.
You're listening to Phenology Plus on KAXE, Community Radio for Northern Minnesota, 91.7 on the Iron Range, Black Duck, and Palisade, 89.9 in the Brainerd area, and 105.3 in Bemidji, audio streaming on the internet at KAXE.org. I'm Scott Hall with John Latimer. Coming up, wildlife biologist Pam Perry on swans, winter bird feeding, and evening in pine grosbeaks. Also, Bill Berg and Randy McCarty remember Wes Libby, a great conservationist in Minnesota history. Wes died 2 weeks ago at age 101. Phenology Plus is made possible by our listener members and by Dale's Auto Body in Grand Rapids. For 25 years at Dale's, their job has been to make every effort before, during, and after repairs to eliminate problems throughout the process. Dale's Auto Body is committed to customer satisfaction. We also have support from Itasca Surgical Clinic in Grand Rapids. At the Itasca Surgical Clinic, patients are provided with personal screening, diagnosis, and treatment of a full range of medical conditions, all in a caring environment. Mary the Kayak Lady will present a program based on her experiences kayaking 1,007 lakes in Itasca County over the last 15 years. That program is next Monday, November 22nd at noon at the Grand Rapids Area Library. Stories and photographs about these experiences are chronicled in Mary's new book, A Woman, A Kayak, and 1,007 Lakes. The program is free and open to everyone. Call KAXE for more information, 326-1234. It's time now for our monthly visit with Pam Perry. Pam's a non-game wildlife biologist with the DNR. She spoke with me and Kathy Dodge about swans, winter bird feeding, and evening in pine grosbeaks. Here's Kathy Dodge.
We're delighted. On our lake, we started noticing trumpeter swans, and they've been on the lake, and I had never seen a trumpeter swan, and wow, they're big.
Yeah, they are a wow bird, aren't they?
Yeah.
The largest waterfowl species in North America. Ooh. And have you heard them call yet? Have you heard them do the trumpeting sound?
No. Oh, I have to listen because the weather is not conducive to going out and waiting to hear them trumpet. So.
Well, now, Pam, these are the swans that will just go down to Monticello. They're not like the tundras go further, don't they? They go out of state.
They do. They do. The tundras don't winter in Minnesota for the most part, you know, unless they're injured or there's some other problem. But we have a very large wintering population of trumpeters at Monticello. We do have some trumpeters now. We have a few more that are migrating out of the state, and they're usually in family groups when they're migrating. But as I understand, we've got some going to places like Missouri and Nebraska and other scattered states that are a little warmer than our winter, but not real far and not in real big flocks the way the tundra swans are. And the tundras have a pretty spectacular gathering up in down in southeastern Minnesota, down around that Weaver Dune area. Apparently you can have thousands of them there. I've never gone down to see it. It seems like I always am busy in the fall and don't have time to go down there. But I will one of these years because it's supposed to be very, very spectacular.
Do tundra swans and trumpeter swans look alike? Because I know we have swans. Maybe we have tundra swans on our lake.
I will bet you have trumpeters.
Okay.
And how many do you have?
I think there are four, I think.
Yeah. And one of the best, they do look alike. Trumpeters are bigger, and they have a heavier bill, and there are some other ways to tell them apart by the coloring around their mouth and things like that, and they sound different. The trumpeters are named trumpeters because they sound like trumpets. But if you have a family group, a small group hanging around right now in Minnesota, I would lay odds they're trumpeters.
Okay.
Because that's what we're seeing around here in the Brainerd area, too.
Wow.
We're seeing trumpeters. And the tundras tend to go in much larger flocks. They're more in the migration mode of a major migration, and the trumpeters are more in the kind of, well, we'll hang out here till it starts freezing, then we'll move a little further south. And it's just the four of us.
Mm-hmm.
Which would most likely be two parents and two youngsters.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Pam, we wanted to visit with you today, among other things, talking about setting up bird feeders for winter. Where should we begin?
Well, you know, some people feed year-round, and some people only feed in the winter. And whatever you do, I think, you know, that's fine, whatever you enjoy doing and helping the birds that way. And, of course, giving you the opportunity to see birds up close. I do feed all year round, but I shift what I'm feeding, and I change the feeders around quite a bit as we get into fall and going into winter. So whether you're changing your feeder or just setting one up, and if you haven't been feeding, you're planning to feed for the winter, now's the time to do it because it takes a little while for birds to find the feeders and set up their territories around that. And it's also the time when you can pick up some very interesting birds moving through and moving around. So a couple things you want to do, and of course you want to have black oil sunflower seeds and have some covered feeders that you put those in, like either a fly-through feeder with a roof or what they call a trolley feeder or a gravity feeder where you have the glass on each side and the roof lifts up and you put the seed in from the top. Or even a tube feeder will work if you've got a sunflower tube feeder. You also want to put out some millet, a little bit of millet mix. This is the little round seeds. Right now we have a lot of juncos around, and there are a few sparrows still coming through, and the juncos really do like that millet. And that millet should go on an open feeder, either or on the ground. And by an open feeder, I mean what we call table feeder. Suet is the other big thing. And for me, when I'm changing into winter mode, this is when I put out my bigger suet feeder, and I go to the grocery store, and I get a big chunk of suet and stick it in there. And otherwise, I've been feeding suet cakes, because I don't want to attract bears, because we do get bears still moving around through here in Brainerd. And as it gets colder like this, of course, they're settling into their dens and not around. So then I can put the bigger suet out. And something for the finches, you can put out either a sock feeder or a tube feeder with Niger. Niger thistle is really good to attract finches, and these would be gold finches and red poles and a bunch of these little finch-type birds. Or sometimes you can buy a finch mix that's very fine. So either a tube feeder or a sock feeder so that the birds just hang on and pull the little seeds out through there. So those are the basics if you're going to put up a winter feeder or shift over into winter.
Now, last week, your husband Ken and his students at the Forest View Middle School Bird Club had an interesting report. Ken reported an interesting sighting you guys had around your place. Tell us about that.
Oh, the owl?
Yeah.
We were sitting at our dining room table, and like many people in the North Country, we our windows from the dining room table look out into the back in the woods, and I see this big bird. I went, oh, look, coming in, and it just flew right in, landed on top of our bird feeder display, because we have several feeders there with a couple posts and all that, and just sat there and looked around for a while, and tried one hunting attempt where it flew down to the ground and didn't seem to get anything, went back to the top of the feeders, and then on the second try it certainly did. And it did look like it was either a short-tailed shrew or a vole of some kind. It had a short tail, whatever it ate, but it grabbed it and just swallowed it head first. And it's amazing when you can see them, how quick they catch something and how quick they eat the whole thing and it's gone. And so then he flew back up and then headed into the woods. So I guess it's good hunting around our bird feeders. And I wouldn't be surprised for people. Sometimes they'll say, oh, I had an owl around my bird feeder hunting the birds. And most often they're hunting the small mammals, because that's really what they prefer, are those small mammals, which do get attracted to the seeds that are on the ground. And there usually are little mice and voles and things around there. And we've got colder weather, we've got northwest winds coming in, and this is going to push some birds down and through. And we had a sighting at our feeder here just a week or so ago. We had one evening grosbeak, and we got really excited about that because we don't see them here in Brainerd much anymore. And I know that further north, you can get a lot of evening grosbeaks up in St. Louis County, Lake and Cook. But down here in Crow Wing County, they have become exceedingly rare. And when we first moved here in 1982, we had lots of evening grosbeaks. They'd come in every winter, and that certainly doesn't happen. In fact, I don't think I've had one in my backyard for at least 2 years, maybe 3 years. And so we had this male come in, and we got pretty excited, and then we haven't seen it since or any others. But I did hear there were some other evening grosbeak sightings around in Aiken County and that area. And so maybe we're going to see a few this winter, which I think would be really wonderful. This is one of those dramatic birds that's very easy because the male is bright yellow and then with the black and white on the wings and this bright yellow eyebrow on a dark head for the male. And the females are grayer. They still have the white and black on the wings. But talking a bird about robins, a little smaller than a robin, 8 inches long or so, and the yellow, you're definitely going to notice. And then this huge bill. That's why they're called grosbeaks, because they do have this great big bill. So I think it'd be really great if we had some more grosbeaks coming in, evening grosbeaks this year.
Let's turn to another grosbeak, the pine grosbeak, because that's another one I rarely see anymore. How about you, Pam?
I had a coworker come to me and say, she had a bird hit their window, and she didn't know what it was. And she said it was the size of a robin, gray, with kind of russet on the head and russet above the tail. And at first I couldn't think what it was, and then she said it had a heavy beak. And I said, oh, I bet it's a pine grosbeak. And she brought it in, and she lives just north of Brainerd, up on the river. And sure enough, it was a female pine grosbeak with the rusty on the head and the rusty above the tail. And again, these are birds that we haven't seen as often down here in Brainerd for some years, and they used to be more common. Why they don't come down as much, I just don't know, but could be really fun to have those birds around as well. The males are more reddish with white on their, some white on their wings. The female are a little more drab. Sometimes the females don't have the russet. Sometimes they have more of a yellowy olive color on their head and above the tail. But a chunky, plump bird, and both these birds are easy to identify because of the big beaks that they have. And they love sunflower seeds. So those black oil sunflower seeds that I talked about earlier, get them out on your feeder, and maybe you'll get some at your backyard.
When we have spent winters up on the Gunflint Trail, there are just tons and tons of pine grosbeaks in that area. It must be because of the change in the forest.
Yeah.
It's
and
more boreal.
That's their habitat up there, mm-hmm. is more in the boreal forest and further north. And they do nest up there, and so do the evening grosbeaks. I was checking earlier this morning where in the Breeding Bird Atlas where nesting evening grosbeaks had been recorded, and certainly it was in St. Louis County and Lake and Cook. So those are the areas, and I think it's pretty similar for the pine grosbeak as well.
Pam, by the time we talk with you next month in December, we're going to be getting ready for Christmas bird counts. Any thoughts on that?
Oh, one of my favorite times of the year. And for anyone who's a bird watcher and loves getting out and seeing birds and seeing what's out there, Christmas bird counts are great fun. Our first one will be on December 18th, and that'll be the Crosby Christmas bird count. And then on January 1, there will be the pillager count in Cass County, and then also the Rice Lake National Wildlife Refuge count in Aiken County. But for people who really like birds, this is a big event. And for other people, I mean, the holidays are concerts and family events and church and doing all those things. And birders add in there also these Christmas bird counts, which are going out and counting during the day and then having a tally party in the evening. So everyone has, every one of these counts has a social event associated with it as well. People get together and talk about what they've seen. And every year it's different. And some years we've had a whole bunch of this or that. We've had some years where we found crossbills, some years where there were a lot of red poles. Maybe this year we'll have grosbeaks, and that would be really, that would be fun.
Yeah,
so I'm looking forward to it, and I always get geared up. And anyone who's interested in Christmas bird counts, you can go on the Minnesota Ornithologists Union website, and they have a drop-down link to Christmas bird counts. Or if anybody wants more information, they certainly can call me as well.
Pam Perry is a non-game wildlife biologist with the DNR. Wes Libby was a beloved person in his hometown of Grand Rapids and a giant in the conservation communities throughout Minnesota. Wes died a couple of weeks ago. He was 101 years old. And retired DNR wildlife biologist Bill Berg and conservationist Randy McCarty were longtime friends of Wes. And I asked Bill and Randy to share their memories of Wes. Randy first met him about 20 years ago in the Grand Rapids Rotary Club.
We just celebrated our 75th anniversary here a couple of weeks ago. So the club was formed in 1935. Wes had been a member since 1939. Now, that I found to be pretty incredible, and I got to be honest with you, Wes attended virtually every meeting in the last year and a half, well, I guess last year now. You know, his family had asked that we, you know, drive him. And so, of course, if I look at my calendar for November, the entire month of November, Monday evening, it's marked Rotary Wes, because we picked him up and it worked out really, really well. So that's how vibrant a guy he was. I mean, right up to the last moment, he was right there. Had a handshake like a bear and always had an incredibly intelligent thing to say about virtually anything.
Bill Berg is a member of the local Isaac Walton chapter. The Ikes chapter was named after Wes Libby.
Yeah, it was, you know, and just 4 years ago, in fact. And I've known Wes since 1974 when we came down from the War Road and Baudette area, and I joined the local Ikes chapter here. And his accomplishments were so great. 4 years ago, we renamed the Grand Rapids Ikes to the Grand Rapids Wes Libby Isaac Walton League of America chapter. But, you know, the guy was so influential, and he never really took any credit for what he did. You know? And I've been lucky to have known him for a little bit more than like a quarter of his life. Just think of that, you know. And his accomplishments, you know, just think if a person like Wes hadn't been around, and a couple of the other guys that are with him, the Boundary Waters canoe area. Wilderness might not have been established, you know. The Pokegama Lake Association, the Itasca Coalition of Lake Associations, Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, and Wes was associated with a bunch of fellas in the 60s, Save Minnesota Deer, that evolved into Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. And I remember when I was in college, and these fellas from Save Minnesota Deer would come down to the Capitol with an old rusty pickup truck or a car with a dead wolf-killed deer or winter-starved deer, you know. And this evolved into Deer Hunters Association, you know, and just he accomplished so much. And up until like a year ago, he was still so active. You know, he still drove at night. And when we asked him if he wanted to ride to the Isaac Walton League meeting, he would ask, why? I can drive myself, you know.
That's how good he was.
Now, I know he was a deer hunter. Duck hunter too? Was he waterfowl guy?
He used to be. Yeah.
And I know he hunted as recently as a few years ago.
Last year he hunted.
Oh, he did.
He hunted in 2009. Can you imagine that? And I think he had a crack at a deer. He didn't get it, you know. And there was always a good story. You know, his father established Libby Mortuary, mm-hmm. and then of course Wes got his college degree in mortuary science and worked with his dad for many, many years at the mortuary. But there was always kind of a joke, you know, what keeps this guy going? What do morticians have running through their blood, you know, to keep him so active and so healthy and so energetic for all those years?
Well, the other thing I appreciate about Wes is that he lived for such a long time. He saw change over so many years. And then when he started to advocate for something, such as the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association or the Boundary Waters, he was coming from a perspective that saw that change and saw the need for something, as opposed to idealizing it.
Yeah.
It wasn't an idealistic thing. It was a practical thing that needed to be done.
Yeah. Yeah, he talks about that change, you know. He talks about the change when he was a young boy. And it was about 3 years ago, I took him to an Isaac Walton League meeting in West Duluth, just west of Jay Cook State, or east of Jay Cook State Park. And he told me about back when he was a boy, once you got west of what's now Highway 38 in Grand Rapids, right in town, you were really in the wilderness. And he talks about just walking across the street, you know, and what's now Highway 38, and shooting rough grouse and sharp tails and everything, you know. And it was absolutely incredible lifetime, and the change that he did see, you know, he's the change he's still seeing, really, you know.
Yeah.
You know, guys, I got to tell you, though, you know, as far as the change is concerned, what I was found incredible about Wes was, you know, for example, email. I mean, not only did he keep up with his email, he was the guy who could, you know, email pictures before anybody else in the group knew how to do it. That's how, you know, how good he was and how incredibly intelligent and how vibrant he was always. Just an incredible thing when it came down to it.
Yeah. Well, again, that perspective of seeing change and trying to do something about it.
Yeah.
Wes understood the pressure that was coming onto the resource space.
There's no question about that. You know, just thinking in Minnesota, if there were 10 or 20 Wes Libbys. Think of the change. Think of the progress we would make in managing our natural resources. Think, you know, and on the reverse, think of people like Wes Libby who are not around. You know, it goes both ways there. But, you know, he was his dad started the Isaac Walton League in Grand Rapids in 1925. And in 1923, the Ike started nationwide. So, and then it went defunct for a couple, 3 years, and Wes and his dad started again, I think, Randy, like 1939 or something like that.
Exactly.
And here again, his career, maybe you can talk about the Rotary, but, boy, he just did so much for the community and the Ikes and the Rotary.
Mm-hmm. Well, Wes would want us to talk a little about the deer hunting this year, I know, and other wildlife topics. And Randy, have you had a chance to do some hunting yet?
I actually have. In fact, I was laughing. I was talking to John last night. I'm hunting out of his place. Of course, we're also hunting out in the back archery on the back 40 out here. It's been an incredible season. Saturday, being in the woods watching that snow roll, it was absolutely the best thing I think I've ever seen before in my life. Of course, after 12 hours of being in the woods, it was a little brisk, but, you know, it was an incredible day. And it's you know, of course, the first weekend, you know, you're swatting mosquitoes. But so it's incredible, absolutely the way it ought to be as far as I'm concerned. So,
Bill, how's your hunting going?
Yeah, well, on opening weekend, my son Eric got a really nice buck on Sunday. And this past weekend, I did the same thing on Sunday as well. And as Randy knows, hiking in the woods, there was almost zero visibility. It was nice to have the snow, but that wet snow hung on to everything, you know. And I sat on my deer stand, and I had one place to look. Otherwise, I had 10 feet in front of me. There was zero visibility. And I had one place to look, and I wasn't taking care of anything. My gun was all full of snow. My scope cover had snow on it. I was eating a sandwich. And I look up, and in that one place I had to look, there was a nice little buck coming. So he's hanging, and I'm going to start butchering maybe tomorrow. But it was really, really great.
Now, Randy, you said you hunted on property well over out at John's and property near you. Bill, do you go to a camp or anything? Or?
No, you know, we used to, back when we lived by the other trout lake, we used to go up by Togo and hunt, and some guys from work. And now we just really hunt in, just in kind of in back of the house a little bit, and over towards Spider Lake in that country. And not many hunters. It's nice because it's the Joyce Estate roadless semi-primitive wilderness area. And there are no ATVs, no nothing. If you want to get a deer, you have to really work to get it out of there. And it's a nice kind of a semi-primitive hunt.
Now, hunters always tell me when they're hunting, for one thing, they always see other things. So I want to ask you, Randy, anything other than deer you noticed while you were deer hunting?
Actually, that's exactly it. You know, and again, out at John's, it's, you know, I mean, he's left everything so incredibly pristine out there. You know, you got fox wandering through. You got, you know, I mean, every time you look up, there's something. And in fact, it's really a very strange situation from a ornithological. You know, I mean, we never see gray jays here. You know, and of course, I'm over on Pools Bay, and yet when you get out to John's, you know, his place out the tree farm out there. You know, we got Canadian jays all over the place, and it's something I always found to be an incredible anomaly. But yeah, it's been, you know, as far as I'm concerned, yeah, I'm at that point now where I go ahead and load my rifle. But if I shoot a deer, that's great. If I don't, you know, you just get out and enjoy it. So.
How about you, Bill?
Well, you know, that happens with age, and I think back to Wes. I mean, he must have sat there and think of the things that he saw, you know, in his probably like something like 85 years of deer hunting. Just think of what that guy saw, you know, in the woods, and how he appreciated it. But I think that, you know, the insects this year were incredible, and the deer ticks were even worse than that. But the swan migration on the morning of November 11th, Veterans Day, the tundra swans were migrating in huge numbers, and literally dozens of flocks from the Northwest. That was an incredible sight for me. And, you know, where trumpeter swans really do trumpet, the tundra swan just kind of scream and holler their way through it. And it was just an awe-inspiring sight to be able to see that.
Bill, any thoughts on the condition of the deer in Minnesota?
Well, you know, it just... milder, their winters tend to be milder and milder, and DNR has done some adjustments this year on harvest quotas and so forth, but extremely, you know, high deer numbers. You know, I dug out an old Isaac Walton League magazine from, I want to say it was the 40s, and you know, back then there weren't essentially any deer in southern or central Minnesota. If a deer was found in like Watonwan County or something, it made the newspapers, you know.
Wow.
Just think of that. Think of the progress. And I remember when I was still with DNR and you know, I went through this whole struggle of 1971 following the tough years in the late 60s. 1971, statewide deer season closure. Think of that. You know, and DNR went through a number of different harvest scenarios and season lengths and everything else, and their goal was to get 1 million deer eventually. Well, that happened pretty quick, you know, with milder winters and structuring harvests and you know, antlers permits and so forth. So we're there or way above that. It's an incredible success story if you look at having a lot of deer as a success story. You know, mm-hmm. Their forest ecologists will say that there's so many deer, you know, that the forests have changed and
suffer for it a little.
Yeah, you bet.
White pine. And
yeah,
like
for
that.
Sure.
Yeah. Randy, when did you begin hunting?
You know, it's funny. Bill should mention 1971. I actually started hunting deer in 67, I think. And it was, you know, and that, of course, were the, you know, the really tough winter years. There was a lot of deer kill, and I remember 71 having the season shut down, thinking it was, you know, it made perfect sense. You know, a lot of people denigrate a lot of the decisions that the DNR makes, but if you look at what they've done over the last 30, 40, 50 years, you know, the deer, as Bill mentioned, you know, is an incredible success story. Wild turkeys, you know, there's so much proliferation of wildlife that wasn't here, you know, 50 years ago, 40 years ago. They've done an incredible job as far as I'm concerned. And so, like I said, over the years, you know, I mean, to say, okay, you can shoot five deer within a specific zone, there's a reason for those kind of decisions. And I think that, you know, when people understand that, you know, they've got the best interest of the wildlife in, you know, in mind, you know, so when they say, please don't feed deer, for example, people look at it and say, well, you know, I mean, it's my God-given right. Well, you don't understand it doesn't do the deer any good, and it probably hurts the you know, the herd in a, you know, long-term basis. So
yeah,
anyway,
the DNR helped with by a lot of individuals like Wes Libby and organizations.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
the Deer Hunters,
you know,
Association.
And you know, that old Save Minnesota Deer, I have to give a hand to, like, people like Wes, but Jim Lang and Adolph Anderson and Milt Stenland and Dave Shaw and all these guys, all gone, you know, who worked with Minnesota Deer and or with Save Minnesota Deer, Minnesota DNR, and really shook some, you know, shook some hands and shook some heads and got it all straightened out. But just think of those late 60s deer seasons. Go back to that again, where we had a 9-day any sex shoot 'em up. If it's brown, it's down, and you killed it. And just think, now we have like 500,000 deer hunters. And back then we had 100,000, maybe 150,000 deer hunters. And following those tough winters of the late 60s, we just, DNR and the people of Minnesota just realized we're never going to get our deer back. So that closure, and then they put their heads together. But here again, Wes and all these other guys kind of drove the train. Pretty neat.
Retired wildlife biologist Bill Berg, remembering Wes Libby and the generation of 20th century pioneers in the Minnesota conservation movement. Wes Libby died a couple of weeks ago at age 101. We also heard from Randy McCarty. Phenology Plus is made possible by our listener members and by the Bonner Eye Clinic in Grand Rapids. For over 45 years, the Bonner Eye Clinic has served the eye care needs of Grand Rapids, Itasca County, and the Iron Range, providing full-service ophthalmology, cataract, and LASIK refractive surgery, plus eye exams for glasses and contacts. We also have support from Atchison Tire Company in Grand Rapids. Locally owned for more than 90 years, Atchison Tire has offered new tires and repair services for generations of their customers online at atchisontire.com. That's Phenology Plus for this Tuesday evening. I'm Scott Hall with John Latimer, and thanks for listening.